So, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Did everybody have a nice lunch? Yes? Great. Did you, there wasn't chicken, right? It was conference beef. So, we're just going to give it like one more second because I see a bunch of people just traveling in here. Yes. What time is Okay, it looks like we have the majority of everybody back, so we're going to go ahead and get started. This class is going to be Family Violence Issues in Municipal Court. And your presenter for today is Pat Riffle. Pat is the court administrator in Pearland, and she's been there for about 6 years. Prior to that, Pat is a certified social worker, and she was a social worker for the state of Texas for how many years?
14.
For 14 years.
Social worker for like 23 years.
So she was a social worker for 23 years, and specifically with the Catholic churches for charities for 14 years. Kat is... Yeah, I've lost it too. Yes, her bio is not there, and I wrote a bunch of stuff down, and I promptly misplaced it, so I'm flying by the seat of my pants. Sorry. Pat is a level 3 certified court clerk. Congratulations. Not only that, but she is also certified with the National Center for Courts for... What is it?
Certified court manager.
Certified court manager for the National Center for Courts. So she is well-versed in the subject that she is presenting, so please give her a warm welcome.
Okay. Yeah, they picked me because of all the social work and stuff. She's like, will you do this? And it's like, yeah, I can do this. Having worked social work for many, many years, I came in contact with this way too often. Changed jobs, changed the world, changed careers because I was tired of all that and all those people's troubles and all that horrible stuff. Walk right back into it in the middle of municipal court. Who'd have thought? I thought I was going to do something nice and easy and relaxing, and I could go home after work and not take it with me and all that wonderful stuff. It was all a myth. So I do talk about this subject. I need to say a couple things first. I will use the generic he when I talk about it. That doesn't mean just men are abusers and just women are abused. It's just so much easier to just say he than he or she. Every time I open my mouth. So please don't get offended. The other thing is I will make light sometimes of this, and I'll do it for a couple reasons. It's heavy, it's dark, it's ugly. If I don't make light of it every once in a while and throw some little thing in there that makes people laugh a little bit or at least ease up a little bit, it gets to be a very bad hour. So don't take offense. I've had people in the past take offense because I've thrown in a little, you know that's not funny. Well, no, I know it's not funny. It's just the way I function. So please don't get offended if I throw something in there that might make people laugh. It's not meant to discard or lessen the problems that we're talking about. Oh, LSW's licensed social worker. I'm sorry. I carry a social work license with the state of Texas that I'll never let lapse because I can't ever get it back again. So I still go to those trainings also so that I don't lose my license. And someday I may want to go back and do that again. I'm not sure. I don't think so, but I'm not sure. Okay, this is what we're going to learn in the next 50 minutes. We're going to identify the phases of the cycle of violence. There's a cycle. We're going to talk about that. This thing is annoying. We're going to describe and employ legislative requirements for Class C family violence issues. In the last two legislative sessions, there were major things that happened that affected us and how we deal with domestic violence cases. The last thing we're going to do is recognize the professional, societal, and practical implications and concerns in dealing with family violence cases. We're going to talk about what it really means, how it affects us. We're going to talk about what it is. We're going to talk about what we have to do with it. And we're going to talk about why we're talking about it. What does it do and why is it important to us? What is family violence? The definition is not limited to normal family. The definition is in numerous codes, it's in numerous ways. First is dating violence. The family code describes dating violence, and it says it's based on the nature, the frequency, and the length of the relationship. I don't know who gets to decide if it's a date. I don't know who gets to decide if it's a relationship. That's how it's defined. Teen violence, dating violence would fall into here based on the qualifications that some of the courts have pulled down. Because if any of you that have teenagers know that the length and duration of those relationships aren't real long, but somebody has decided that that needs to count, which is a good thing. Former spouses. You don't have to still be married anymore. Parents of the same child without regard to marriage. The baby daddies. See, I'll throw there's something to laugh about a little bit. Parents of the same child without regard to marriage, whether you live together or not. If you look, it says without regard to whether those individuals reside together. See, if a child with someone, if that becomes an abusive relationship, it falls under the guidance of family violence. The last one's foster parents and foster children, which unfortunately we're seeing way too much of. The thing that it doesn't address, and it doesn't need to address it specifically, is elderly violence. I don't know about y'all, but we're seeing an increasing amount of elderly violence. You know, grandma's living at the home. And what makes me sad is the last couple cases we've seen, it wasn't the parents, grandma's children, it was their grandchildren that were becoming abusive. It may happen here, it may not, but we get grandmothers coming in paying these kids tickets all the time. It's like they live with their grandparents. Grandma's like, does whatever they tell them to do. I had a kid one time, not my favorite child. He had more tickets. He could have bought a new car for all that he paid me in tickets. And one day grandma was there and my staff was kind of talking to her about his tickets and how many he gets because she was writing a check like she always does. And he said, shut up and just write the check. I just went off. I'm surprised I still have my job because it was like, this woman has been in here for years paying your fines. And you tell her, shut up, bitch, and just write the check. It was like, I guarantee he's abusive of her. She's scared to death of him. Every time she comes in, she shakes. So I called my victim's assistance coordinator and said, do you have anything on this family? So elderly abuse is getting to be a real problem. And like I said, it's not the parents, it's the grandchildren that are becoming an issue. The other thing is, because we talked about family and we talked about it doesn't matter if they live together, we have to hit the other side of the coin. Even if they're not related and they do live together, they fall into domestic violence. Living together in the same dwelling without regard to whether they're related to each other includes a person who has previously lived in the household. If you're cohabitating with someone and you move out and they beat you up, that's still family violence. Relationships can be by consanguinity or affinity. Who was in my study session yesterday can tell me what these mean? Consanguinity is by blood, affinity is by marriage. So they can be related by blood or by marriage. So you can't beat up your mother-in-law. It's the rule. And if I had to live with mine, we'd have issues. A cycle of violence was developed in 1974 by a psychologist named Lenore Walker. We've all heard these terms. We probably understand how this works. So let's just go into it a little bit. We're going to start at the beginning, which doesn't make sense to y'all, but this is just the beginning. It goes around in a circle. So we'll start with the abuse, and we'll watch how it all came about. First thing's the abuse. It's a power play. It's who's the boss. Don't tell me, and I'm going to knock you across the room if you open your mouth one more time. We'll start with the abuse. And then the guilt and the apologies. I am really sorry. I love you. Don't leave me. Flowers come in. Honeymoon's on again. All that fun stuff. And then we got the excuses and the rationalizations. Why did you make me do that? Look what you made me do. Now I'm in trouble just because you made me hit you. This is where it's, you know, if the kids weren't dirty when I got home, or if the bills weren't behind, or if you didn't cook so terribly, or, you know, this is where all this stuff comes in that, you did this to yourself. You made me mad. How many of us have heard those people say things like that? She made me do it. She'd be quiet. I wouldn't have to pop her. then we're going all over. Here we're going, okay, we're done. I'm done getting excuses. Now we're going to live normally for just a little while. We're going to fall in love again. And they do this because this is where he gives her hope. This is what keeps her from leaving. And like I said, I'm doing the generic, but or him. This is what keeps that person from leaving. Because sometimes this stage is so nice that you can't even imagine that it'll get ugly again. So this is a necessary step in order for this relationship to keep moving. If you never had this, everybody'd leave. Somehow, some way, some form, or they'd be dead. But this is that little period of time where everything feels good. Oh, now I remember why I loved him. He won't ever do that again, he promised. This is hope. I had a really good friend, and one year we were sitting around talking about, this makes me emotional, we were talking about New Year's resolutions. It was New Year's Eve, and we're doing our, hey, her main thing was she wanted to make it through the whole year without ending up in the emergency room. That was the only New Year's resolution she had. And it was like, you know, we're going on diets and saving money and quitting smoking. She's trying not to go to the emergency room. She didn't make it. So this is where it becomes nice. It was New Year's Eve. They were fun. They were friends till the end of the night. But so this is the fantasy and planning. The honeymoon, and then he went, yeah, but, you know, it's real nice right now, but she's up to something. Things are just too good. She's hiding something. This is where they start time. He spends time thinking, what's she doing and who's she doing it with? How come she was 10 minutes late getting home from the grocery store? She stopped someone's house. Or was she even at the grocery store? Where'd she go? She don't really go visit her mama all that time. This is where the fantasies in their brain just starts playing out all these little deals. And then he got set up. This is where he's going to create a situation where he can justify abusing again. You're back to the beginning. Look what you made me do. You were 10 minutes late from the grocery store because you were out, God only knows what. Look what you made me do. So this is just a vicious cycle that goes on and on and on till it breaks. And unfortunately, there's about two ways it can break. You can get out or you can get dead. So we talked about what it was and the definitions. Now let's talk about the things that family violence is not. There are so many myths out there about what it really is. And we need to just talk about some of those because we know better. Family violence is rare. That's myth number one. Over 74% of Texans are close to someone who has experienced family violence. 47% of the people report that they've personally experienced domestic violence of some type. That's almost half of us. Either they lived in it when they were children and saw it in their household, or they've lived in it themselves, or somehow they've experienced domestic violence of some type. That's not rare. That's half of us. This one scares me because I have a 17-year-old. One of three teen girls in a serious relationship, whatever that is when you're a teen, report concern about being physically hurt by their partner. I have seen little girls that my daughter's grown up with since kindergarten that I know are probably in abusive relationships. It's crazy. And if you start that way, it's real hard to get out. So they become adults in abusive relationships if somebody doesn't step in. And I can tell you a story about a school counselor that will drive you nuts. Domestic violence is the leading cause of injury requiring serious medical attention in women 18 to 49. More than car accidents, more than muggings, more than rapes, more women show up in the emergency room for family violence than any of those things added together. That's just mind-boggling to me. And the nationwide, and those are only people they can prove that came in from family violence. How many people did they hear fell down the stairs? Those are people they know came in for family violence, didn't come in with a different excuse. Nationwide, three women are murdered by their boyfriend or husband every day. 2008, 136 women in the state of Texas murdered in domestic violence situations. That's 136 women right here in our state. That was up 30% from 2007. We got bad economic times right now, which has a tendency to make this worse. I don't want to see last year's stats. I can't even imagine. They're not out yet. They're not done with them, but I can only be afraid that they've increased. So 136 women in the state of Texas were killed in domestic violence. Myth number two, family violence is confined to the lower class. How much have we heard on the TV with Mel Gibson in the last week? You think Mel Gibson's lower class? might be low class. I'm sure he's lower class. Reports from police records, victim services, and academic studies show domestic violence exists equally in every socioeconomic group, regardless of race or culture. It's not the poor people. Those are the people we might see. Those are the people we might assume. But it's not. The problem with this is there are some reporting issues. Your high society lady that's the wife of your mayor or whatever isn't going to go tell somebody. You know, they don't want anybody to know. They're going to try to keep it hidden. They're going to go to a family doctor. They're not showing up at the emergency room. And everybody's going to keep it quiet. So you got some issues with the higher echelon of society that they're not going to tell anybody. This could have been going on with Mel Gibson for years, but she didn't tell anybody until she tried to get some money. So it wasn't a matter of, I'm going to tell somebody. It just became a matter of, I need to use this. So there's reporting issues. The other issue is culturally, there's huge reporting issues. The immigrant population can't report domestic violence. You're going to get deported. You don't want to get into the system. So you're not going to call the police and say, I'm being abused. And culturally, it's not the right thing for you to do. You know, for centuries, our churches have said, just buck up and go home to your husband. So culturally, they're not going to report as often. The Asian culture is another underreported culture. Asian women don't call and report domestic abuse. It's just something they live with. So we have reporting issues that make it look like it's just the lower class because they will go for help or somebody will notice, but that's just a myth. Family violence is about rage and anger. He just lost it. If he just lost it, how come he hits her where nobody can see it? How many women have you, I've worked with many women who were abused who got hit where he'd hit her in the chest, where her clothes, or her thighs, burn her on her thighs, where her clothes would cover it so people didn't know. How many of you ever lost your temper? Can you stop and think about what you're doing so you make sure nobody's going to notice? No, it's not loss of, he didn't lose it. It's a control issue. If he just lost it, how come he didn't hit her in front of anybody? Again, if you've ever lost your temper, you're not real choosy on where you lose it. It's like, if I'm going to lose it, I'm going to lose it. I don't care who's standing there. So if it was just about a loss of temper, how come it never happens in front of anybody? If it was just a temper control issue, how come he doesn't beat up his boss or his mother or whoever? It's not a temper control issue. It's a control issue. They don't lose it with their friends and coworkers. And some miracle, it always stops when the police get there. It's like, wow, he wasn't beating her up when I got there, but she was hysterical. We get tons of tickets. Our police's policy, and it's probably most of yours, both people get a ticket. That's the deal. Let the judge figure it out. Why? Because she's going crazy when they get there. Because she can. Finally, she feels safe enough where she can just go off. And he's calm and cool. That's what the cops will say. They'll come in and go, he was just standing there doing nothing, and she was a maniac. Well, yeah, maybe if he'd have been there 10 minutes before, you'd have saw the opposite picture, because she finally feels safe enough to lose it. It's like, phew, I've got help, so now I'm going to go off. So they get tickets because they are maniacs when the officers get there. I mean, I've read some of those reports, and it's like, you're right, she was a maniac. But I'm not real sure that he wasn't a maniac before you got there. So if it was temper control, if it was anger control and anger management would work, this wouldn't be the case. If you've got anger control issues, I taught anger management classes for 3 years in Amarillo. If you've got anger management, these issues don't work. I work with people who lost it at work and lost their job, people who lost it in the public. They just lost it because they had anger control issues. This is not it. This is, I own you, you're not doing what I told you to do, and you're going to get it. This one's my favorite. She must like it or she'd leave. Hear that all the time. Victims do leave up to 7 to 10 times before getting out for good. They leave, they leave, they leave, they leave. Stop and think, and this is not easy for you to think about, but ask yourself, take your life right now, how easy would it be to pick up and go? I'd do it. How easy would it be to just pick up and run from everything you know? Financially, emotionally, you have children. Is he threatening? You can go, but leave the kids here. You're not going to leave your kids there with that maniac.
like, you don't have any money. Your parents are going, what's wrong with you? Just keep your marriage intact. And how easy, and I really had to sit down and think about that when I wrote this, and I thought, I'm a very strong-willed person. I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could pick up and leave everything I have right now. My job, my family, my home, my children, and it. He probably would have to kill me because I don't think I could do it. So put that in your mind when you're thinking, what does she stay there for? Maybe she just can't even fathom life with nothing. Where are our resources? Who controls them, and where's the help? You know, where is it? Is there any? We have a really good victims assistance coordinator in our city. She's a godsend to the people in our city. But our women's shelter is always full, so there's nowhere to go. Do y'all even have contact with your victims assistance coordinators? Your court should have one. There was a grant that funded them years ago, and we don't, so they're almost free to your city. So all the bigger cities probably have them. I would charge every one of you to call your police department when you get back and ask who that person is. I work with mine a lot. She comes to court when we have cases. I call her about people. It's not required, but actually about 6 years ago, a federal grant went out that made it almost free. So a lot of cities jumped on it. Yes, you have to renew the grant. It probably wasn't important to the police chief. Said they had one, but that their grant ran up and they didn't renew it. Said it probably wasn't important to the police chief. They need to put it in a different department. They need to put it in the court because it would be important to us. So check and see who that is. Check and see if you have a woman's shelter in your area. I put brochures in our restroom, in our ladies' room, just in case. You know, they've been beat down for so long, and that's part of the problem. There's that emotional insecurity and that self-esteem. And somebody tells you that you're trash for long enough, you're really going to think you're trash. So you're not going anywhere because you can't. So 70% of the people that get murdered in domestic violations get murdered during a separation. So it's dangerous to leave. 70% of the deaths happen during periods of separation. It's 15% higher than people that are still married and 25% higher than people that are divorced. So that is the most dangerous time when you're first leaving. It's the how dare you leave me. You know, usually by the time you get through it all and get to the divorce and the legal process is all done, it's a little safer for you. But it's the separation. And you don't want to put your family at risk. You know, I'm not running home to my mother because then they're at risk. You know, what happens when he comes over here and, you know, we've seen that in the news a few times. Dad get, you know, in Houston, I don't know about where y'all live, but you'll see it where the daughter's boyfriend killed the whole family. So, you know, you're going through your brain, well, I can't run to my parents because then they're at risk. And what do you want your kids to live with? So getting out is not as easy as you would think. So please don't think, and I used to think that way. Why don't she just leave? How stupid can she be? Try to reframe your thought process because that's not the case. Why do we have to know all this other than we deal with it on a daily basis? Class C misdemeanors. There's two Class C misdemeanors which are punishable by a maximum fine of $500. Assault by threat, intentionally or knowingly threaten another with imminent bodily injury, or threat by physical contact. Maximum fine of $500. You can beat your wife or you can park in a handicap spot. They both cost you the same. Just want you to be aware of that. That drives me crazy. It's like, that's just my little aside with the legislature. Like, but if you don't put your kids in a car seat, it's only $25. But don't you park them in a handicap spot if they're not in a car seat. So that's $500. The law specifically says it doesn't include defensive measures to protect yourself. So if you can prove you were doing these things, but you were doing it because somebody was coming at you, then you're okay. Otherwise, the legislatures hit us with some requirements. In 2007, they had the admonishment for family violence regarding handguns, and in 2009, they kind of clarified it all and made it a little harder for us. Requires a person charged with family violence to be admonished on the possible loss of the right to possess or purchase a firearm if convicted. And I'm sure all your judges are doing this. You read the little deal that says if you get convicted of family violence, you can never own a gun or ammunition again in the rest of your life. Can't hunt, can't Can't skeet shoot, can't go in the military, can't do anything. Nothing to do with firearms. You're done. That makes it rough. Yes, sir. If you're already in the military, you probably have a serious issue with your JAG. So you would probably have to bring it up at the JAG office. If you got caught in a civilian court, I wouldn't want to go tell my JAG, but. You're over my head. It's an Article 15, she says. So the question was, what happens if you're already in the military? I'm not real versed on that, but you're going to end up in a whole lot of trouble, I'm sure. No, because I think if you're ready to be deployed and you get a family violence admonishment, you're probably not getting deployed right away. You're probably going to the brig. Well, they might send you to Iraq before you get to trial. I don't know. But I don't know if I want these crazy people in Iraq. But the admonishment notice in Article 2714, the Code of Criminal Procedure, says it can be oral, it can be written, or it can be on your citation if it's a Class C misdemeanor. Did y'all squeeze it on there like we were told? Does anybody have another millisecond inch to put another word on the back of your citation? You have a 5-page citation? Ours is still one. I'm squeezing it. But it is required. This whole admonishment right here is required to be on your citations. It's not little either. It's got to be bold. It's got to be. They don't just say, put this on. They say, this is how big it's got to be. And one more time, they tell us it has to be the biggest thing on the citation. It was like, no, last year, this had to be the biggest thing. So now this has to be bigger than the biggest thing. So this has to be on your citation so that you can prove they were admonished. We also have a receipt of admonishment that we get them to sign, that judge has them sign when they're in court or in jail. Even though they've already been admonished, she makes them sign a receipt of admonishment that has the whole thing on it again, and they sign it, and we file it. So that we know they know. Before they plea. The statute says on the citation. I don't know what that means, and your city attorney might be able to explain to you what that means. It depends on your city attorney. We take them to go, does on the citation mean staple to, or does it mean, you know, where can we get away with it? The problem with attachments is we have a real difficult time getting our police department to hand them out. We moved recently to a new court, and I made these really pretty colored deals that say, here was our new address. They didn't give them out. The important thing about this is I don't know who monitors this. People ask me all the time, how long is this going? How long before I can ever own a gun again? And I tell them, you need to contact an attorney. My understanding is never. But who knows? We have a retention period of 5 years. In 5 years, I don't know you got one. Who knows? You know, we're purging you. Once you get purged, does somebody else out there in the wild world know that you can't have a handgun? I don't know. And who monitors? It doesn't go to DPS. It doesn't go anywhere. I've called everywhere going, who gets this information? Just put it in your system. Does anybody know? Do you send it anywhere? Yeah, it doesn't go anywhere. So I thought it was a great idea, but it doesn't go anywhere. And I know in 5 years I'm purging you off my computer and I don't have your file anymore. So hold on. 5 years, maybe? I don't know. But after 5 years, there isn't one. Where are you going to get it from? But how are they going to know what's in my files? But where does it go? My files, municipal court information, doesn't go to NCIC. Yeah, it doesn't go to NCIC. I don't tell NCIC. Ours aren't. I purge after 5 years. That can get you in trouble. I'll explain that to you later if you want to know. Somebody got in trouble for that one. I'm just telling you, it can get you in trouble if you have stuff that should be gone. Somebody did get in trouble. Just a thought. Just a thought of anybody. I'm not notifying anybody when this happens. So I don't know who's monitoring these people's handgun thing. I've called everybody I can think of, including the NRA. who wasn't going to tell me nothing. I'm not telling you all these people can't have a hand. I thought you were just the last person I thought to call. I called the NRA. I don't know. I thought maybe they had a lobby or something. But I can't find out. So if anybody knows, let me know. So we have it. It's kind of like juvenile non-disclosure. It's on the floor at DPS somewhere. Why does any of this matter? I tell you, it matters to me for many reasons. You probably already figured that out. It just gets me. It drives me crazy. Had some personal, you know, some family members that just, strong women that came from my family. They weren't stupid. I was like, oh. But, so it matters for many, many reasons. One, it's a security issue. I have worked and worked and worked with my police department. Fine, you're going to write them 2 tickets. I know that. Please don't give them the same court date. Could you just not give that person the week later?
Well, we don't think about it.
I know. But then I have them. I have them both at the same time. Like, please, don't do that. And they don't come alone. They do not come alone. They come with new boyfriends, new girlfriends, this baby daddy, that baby daddy, this mother-in-law. And they sit there, and they look at each other, and they make comments. And you're not only having to secure the courtroom, you have to ensure the hallway. And then you have to secure the bathroom, because these two girls are fighting over this jerk that neither one of them needs to be with. It's crazy. We had an old judge in Denise. We had this old judge, nicest guy. Well, he was to me. He wasn't to most of the world. But this is a girl that stood in there one time with a disorderly conduct. And she'd gotten a bar fight with this other girl. And they're sitting there and they're talking about it. And she's like, who is that? And she said, that's my baby daddy. He said, what the heck is a baby daddy? And so they're trying to explain to him what a baby daddy is. And he's like, don't even, it doesn't matter. So he says to the other girl, is he your baby daddy too? She said, yes, sir. He's like, poor Judge Cheney didn't know what to do with the baby daddy thing. It was like, and they came all to this disorderly conduct thing, and one little happy family trying to fight with each other in the hallway. So, you know, you got this one going out the back door, this one going out the front door, mom's over there, dad's over there. It's crazy. So it's a security issue. That's why it matters. What do you do with them? Now, we constantly, the bailiff's on one, I'm on the other. Or somebody else is on the other. You know, there's not just two parties sometimes. There's 3 or 4. They bring their children. I don't know if it happens in your court, but they bring their children. Why did you just bring your child to your jury trial for beating on your wife? They were there. They know. It just out of school. It's like you're supposed to be in school today. You don't need to be sitting here. So just be careful. It's a security issue. They're everywhere. Be alert to their body language. You have to be really careful because they're throwing signals at one another and giving each other real bad looks. And you know what's getting the glare. That look that some women can throw, mother-in-laws across the room, is really insightful. So we've caught one. I tried to explain to a woman one time, could you please just not look at him like that? I can't even look at him now. No, not like that, because you're about to set him off in here. It's like, so that's why that one went up there, because I actually had to deal with the glare. She was scaring me. And I was like, please don't look at him like that in here. It's making me nervous. So get the defendant out as soon as your business is finished. We want them to go first. People throw a fit because I don't care where they are on the list. When they sign in, you're going and you're getting out of here. Because I don't want to have to deal with them going off. I don't want the rest of the galley to have to deal with them going off. So if we know there's a domestic violence, we'll put them first. So the key to the whole thing is to be aware for security purposes. I've worked with courts that didn't even realize they had domestic violence issues on their docket that day. Like, how do you not know that? Please pay attention to your dockets. Personal and professional issues. We are human. We can feel stuff. It becomes very hard if you're not aware of your feelings and why you're feeling the way you are when these things are going on. You may be familiar with the parties. Could be neighbors. Could be your daughter's chemistry teacher. All kinds of things. Teachers, neighbors, people from church. You may know them. And it's very uncomfortable, not just for them, but for you. I mean, I'm as embarrassed as they are when they come in. So I'm kind of like, I'm not going to court today because I know some of those people. So, just, and then you have to be quiet. You can't tell anybody. And they always try to enlist you on their side. You know, if it's somebody you know, they're going to come tell you why they're there and what they didn't do. Like, not my business. I'm out of it. I'm not even going to come to court today so you can feel better. You just talk to the judge. It's very uncomfortable. But you have to be aware of who you are and why it bothers you. Don't say work is work and personal is personal and I can go in there and be big. It's going to bug you. If it's somebody you know or if it's somebody in the community, if it's a big shot in the community. We have a lot of sports figures in our community from the Texans and the Astros and things. They get followed around by their little agents and their little press. You got to just be careful. It's embarrassing for everybody. I'm embarrassed. The defendant's embarrassed. The victim's embarrassed. Kids are embarrassed. So just be aware that there's personal feelings that attach to this. And don't just try to pretend that it ain't bothering you. That's the worst thing we can do. And my staff has a rule, and they know. If you're dealing with somebody you can't deal with, you just come tell somebody. No explanation necessary. Because I don't want them to have to go into, I know this person because. And that goes with everything, not just domestic violence. You get somebody that's more than you can handle. The other person can't even ask you why. If you just say, I can't handle this person, somebody else jumps. And I'm probably the one to use that rule the most. So I can't deal with them. Somebody else has to. It's better than getting yourself fired. So count on your coworkers to help you out. The effects on our children. How many of you have juvenile dockets? How many of you have enough kids that you have to have their own docket? You think some of this stuff might be going on for them? Yeah. You saw their parents. If you didn't see their parents, you might. Numerous behavior and emotional consequences of living in an abusive household, even if you're not the abused person. Truancy and poor school performance. A lot of them don't go to school because they're afraid of what's going to happen when they go. You know, I don't want to leave mom here alone. I don't want to leave my mama here by herself. I'm not going to school today. There was a big fight last night, and who knows what's going to happen when they wake up. And if you do go to school, can you think straight? I mean, I have a little argument with my husband, and I'm feeling like I can't think straight because you're worrying it through your head, and you're trying to figure out what's going to happen. Or the worst was when I used to have to take my daughter to school before she drove, and if we'd get in an argument in the morning, it would drive me nuts for hours. So I'm thinking, if something bad went on before school, there's no way she could function. Acting out in the school and the community. Yes, ma'am. Why? She said that they had a kid who started a fire, another girl's hair on fire in the school bus. And when the judge was questioning him about it, he had told him that his parents were fighting all the time and the stuff that was going on in his house. It's a sure thing. Big controversy in Texas City. They were doing this little in-service on bullying at the elementary school. They brought little people in to talk about bullying. Well, the kids were starting to talk about what was going on at home. You know, they were telling nobody can push you around and people shouldn't fight. So the parents threw this blue living fit. It was all over the newspaper. We did not send our children for you to talk to them about our personal business. All over the newspaper, they were picketing the school board. Nobody told them those bullying people were coming. It's like, but kids will talk. So, you know, all they did was have a bullying in service because the kids were bullying each other, and it turned into a, well, at my house. So, yeah, and I'm thinking, I don't think I'd be the parent picketing the school board. I'm not sure I want to be that one. But, I mean, a huge issue. They wanted the teacher fired that bought the bullying service in. And it was crazy. They were like fourth graders. But it just turned into a bullying at my house thing, which wasn't what was meant to happen. But you give kids a forum, they'll tell you all kinds of stuff. Isolation from friends and teachers. You know, you see some kids, they just look like they're stuck in a little hole. And they're just downtrodden. And then they develop poor coping and anger management skills. How do you solve things in my life? You beat it out of somebody. And then we're wondering why they're fighting in school. We get so many disorderly conducts at the school, it's ridiculous. Use and abuse of our law enforcement resources. 40% of the inmates incarcerated for domestic violence were already there before. They were already either on probation or parole or under a restraining order when they did it again. So we're not dealing with these people once. It's an ongoing thing. Becomes huge evidentiary issues. He said, she said. Prosecutors are in big trouble with these. No one saw it. No one was there. No one can testify. He said, she said, he did it, I did it. He hit me first, so I was retaliating. I was protecting myself. Becomes huge evidentiary issues. And then the dropping the charges and the refusal to testify, hearts and flowers all over again. Drives your police officers up a wall. And there's nothing, your hands are tied. What's a prosecutor going to do when she has no witness? You can't force it out of them. What I like is when he's standing right behind her and in the court and they're at my window going, she wants to drop the charges? No, I don't think so. I think you should come tell that to the judge. We don't even let them write one of those little notes that we want to drop the charges. We make them come to court because he's right there, or her, to tell them you want to drop the charges. Frustration for police, numerous visits to the same resident. We had a woman and a man get arrested on the way home from court. He stopped and beat her up again. On the way home, he was so mad that he had to pay her a ticket. She's the one that got the ticket, and he paid it from the time before. On the way home from court. They were in arraignment. He paid her ticket. They got stopped on the way because he pulled over to the side of the road. They didn't even make it home. Crazy. I talked to our officers, and they said 40 to 60% of their calls made at night, their night calls are domestic violence related. 40 to 60%. So more than half of everything our officers do in the evening is domestic violence. That's just a total strain on our resources. And it's dangerous. Those calls are dangerous. They don't know what they're walking into. Society effect. And this is the last slide, which is good because I'm like almost out of time. Societal effects in the workplace. They did a huge survey of the leading CEOs, chief executive officers in the country. 50% of them said that domestic violence is a major problem for their workforce. One third of them believe that domestic violence has a negative impact on their bottom line. It costs them money. Leads to lost productivity, absenteeism, higher health care costs. An estimated $1.8 billion annually goes down the drain because of domestic violence. You have to pay for their insurance, and then they miss work, and then they can't concentrate, and you've got all that going on. Federal government has mandated employee awareness campaigns in all federal departments. 1994, Clinton passed the Violence Against Women Act. And now all federal employees have to be trained every year. I'm hoping it helps. The other thing is recently a grant just came out as part of the stimulus package that unfortunately I'm sad to say we didn't receive. But there was a domestic violence judicial training grant. I don't know if anybody here got it. It was a national grant that was offering money to train judges and court staff on domestic violence issues. We applied, but we didn't get it. We need to train our officers. You know, I get real angry at them when they come in with two tickets. Well, I don't know who beat who, so I just wrote them both one and said, the judge will iron it out. Because they're not trained. We're not trained. Judges aren't trained. No, I just got fortunate that was my training beforehand so I can help people understand because we're not trained. And we don't want to do it. It's very uncomfortable. And some of those guys, you read the incident report, and I know they're innocent until proven guilty, but then they come in, they're so nice. It's like, I just read that incident report, but it's like a dual personality or something. Like I said, I ask you all to please go try to find out if you have a victim's assistance coordinator. That person is a valuable asset to you. Because anytime I call Gina, she comes to court. Or she'll tell me if she has a history with a person, if I need to be careful. She's real good at saying, they're going to bring all these people. Because she knows. She works with these people. You don't get through our court with a domestic violence ticket without having to see Gina. It's the rule. So, everybody who has a family assault ticket has to go to the victim's assistance coordinator, whether they want to or not. So she'll tell me what kind of attitude they have or if we need to be careful. No, it's our police procedure. I don't know how they, I don't even know if they can make it happen, but they do. Our police department requires you don't get out of jail. You're seeing her. That's all there is to it. They might just, I don't know how they do it. Yes, ma'am. El Paso doesn't give tickets. Do they arrest? Good. So El Paso arrests. They don't give tickets. Good. Do they arrest both parties?
No, they have.
Okay. Ours are always arresting both. Because I think the poor things aren't trained. They don't know what happened. They weren't there. Honest, they weren't. It's over by the time they get there, like I said. And she's going nuts. So they figure she had something to do with it. She's lost it. So, That's important. And remember, the most important thing I can tell you is remember, would it be easy to drop your life right now and walk out? So the next time you want to say, oh, it's her problem, if she wants to stay there, that's her issue, just remember, drop everything you are, everything you own, everything you're comfortable with, and go live somewhere else you don't know where, and see how that would feel. So just keep that in your head when you're getting, I only bring that up because I was very judgmental at the beginning of my training on this subject. So just think about that. Everything you own, everything you are, everything you have, all your comfort to go who knows where. And then tell me, why doesn't she leave if it's so awful? So you may have any questions. I know it's a bad, deep subject and it's not the most fun, but I think it's very necessary. I think you all need to know because it's there every single day. So, thank you all.
Thank you, Pat. We are going on break. Okay, hold on.
I'm going to grab it from you, Levita. The class that is going to be in here is the child safety restraints. So if you're staying for child safety restraints, it's in this room. If you are going to the warrant class, that is all the way around the hall. Go past the registration desk, turn left, turn right in the Pancho Villa room. So if you're going to the warrants class, that's where you'll be. We've got 10-minute breaks this afternoon, so we'll see you in your respective class at 2.
Did I cover everything?